morning, ladies and gentlemen. First case for argument is Gasek versus American Airlines. Mr. Drummond.
Good morning, Your Honors. Robert Drummond for John Gasek. Your Honors, by way of introduction, Mr. Gasek is what's called a fleet service clerk, basically a baggage handler for American Airlines, and he had been so for approximately 20 years when he was terminated on January 25th of 2006. On December 22nd of 2005, he sustained a work-related injury while unloading baggage. He injured his left hand, specifically his left middle finger. He immediately reported his injury to his supervisor. He followed all of American Airlines' rules. The very next day, he was seen by American Airlines' affiliated physicians at O'Hare at the University of Illinois Chicago O'Hare Clinic, and he was diagnosed with a sprained finger. He was given certain medical restrictions consisting of no lifting with his left hand over 10 pounds, wearing a splint, and limited use of his left hand.
So, Mr. Drummond, I have a general question. Is it your theory that American Airlines calls in these outside investigators only with respect to people who have taken some kind of workers' compensation leave or otherwise engaged in protected behavior?
Your Honor, it's my theory with respect to Mr. Gasek that they did that. I don't know I don't know whether they would do that with other people under other circumstances.
The record here shows that there were a number of people who were investigated, right?
The record here shows that when the summary judgment motion was filed, for the first time an affidavit was presented enumerating that evidence. We were not aware of that evidence during the course of discovery. That evidence first surfaced during the summary judgment. Why those people were investigated was not presented in the affidavit. So I have no reason to I think there was a mention of family medical leave and other absences.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know why specifically they were investigated.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to figure out where is the real theory of discrimination here, because he does appear not to have been frank with them about what he was doing over that December 29 to 31 time period.
Well, if we could go back for a second, Your Honor, he was injured on December 22nd. He immediately reported his injury. He went to see their physicians, and then he went to what's called transitional duty.
No, I remember that. But then he calls in sick on December 29.
He called in sick on December 29th. He's not required to state a reason. He's not required to go to a doctor. And there's no restriction on what he does with his time, meaning going to a grocery store while he's sick. On December 29th, 7 days after his workers' comp injury, surveillance is initiated. Surveillance is initiated for what reason? Is there a suspicion that the sick call is false? On December 29th, another employee, a Ms. Campaglia, makes a workers' compensation call, follow-up call, to Mr. Gasek, not a call regarding his sick call. And that was established in the record.
Right, but then that's the call. Did he give his girlfriend's number to American?
He may have given his girlfriend's number to American as an emergency number on some form.
Seems like they couldn't have just sort of happened on that randomly.
No, they wouldn't have happened on that randomly, but they they also would have had his regular number, and certainly the surveillance company that they employed was able to come up with his unpublished number and provide them with that information, tell them that the other information was probably his girlfriend, and then subsequently this was all confirmed before Deborah Havens, the person who initiated the surveillance, also initiated the hearing which started the process
right.
of the termination.
That's why I began with my question about the surveillance, because I don't know why American Airlines couldn't even on a random basis, whether it's somebody who's been calling in sick or somebody who allegedly has other injuries, every now and then check up. It's a huge company. For all it knows, some people, maybe not Mr. Gasek, but some people may abuse the privilege of calling in sick.
Well, for the, she's, excuse me if I could, Deborah Havens stated to the surveillance group, the private investigators, that he was being surveilled because of sporadic absences. The last absence prior to that date, December 29th, was a year and a half.
I think we can assume that that was wrong. But why does it matter?
Well, because it could also be false. It could also be a lie.
Suppose it was false. If suppose you just had this random surveillance the judge would suggest.
There is no evidence of random surveillance. There's been no evidence presented by the defendant that they conduct random surveillance.
I'm not trying to argue with you, but I'm trying to understand. You don't have any direct evidence that any steps here were taken because of the injury and the initial steps taken to seek workers' comp claims. So I'm trying to understand why the circumstantial evidence might allow that inference, that that was the reason.
Well, because we have the injury and the comp claim and the initiation of the comp claim within 7 days before the surveillance.
Anything else?
There is no other reason for the surveillance, and the offered reason, sporadic absences, the absences were so sporadic that it was a year and a half.
But subjecting an employee to surveillance in these circumstances doesn't violate his rights in any way, does it?
Surveillance in and of itself would not violate a right.
And he was found to have been deceptive in the information he was providing in taking that sick leave for those 3 days, right?
He was. That was a conclusion that was drawn on the basis.
Was that an unreasonable conclusion, given that he says he's sick and they see him out before New Year's Eve shopping for, I don't know, I assume party supplies or something? So.
Well, after 2.5 days of being in his apartment, he is seen on surveillance going to a grocery store, having lunch with his girlfriend, getting a honey ham.
And is it your position that when somebody calls in sick, all of that kind of conduct is perfectly consistent with that?
There is no prohibition for a sick person to go to the grocery store.
Do you have to actually be sick?
Under American Airlines rules or any other rules.
Do you have to be sick?
Pardon me?
Do you have to be sick in order to legitimately take the sick leave?
He called in sick at before 6 a.m. that morning. The surveillance was that afternoon. Is it possible that he got better as the day went on? I think that's an inference that could be drawn. That's what we're talking about here, is what are the reasonable inferences that could be drawn from the undisputed evidence. There's one inference could be drawn that he was not sick. Another inference that could be drawn is that he got better as the day went on.
But what the inference that has to be drawn is that American Airlines decided to fire him because he claimed the workers' comp, right?
Well, Your Honor,
we're not trying to decide whether they were right or wrong about the sick leave.
You're correct, Your Honor. You're correct. Whether they're right or wrong about the sick leave is not the issue here. The issue is, was he terminated because of the workers' comp claim? If you look at what's called the final advisory, which is the document they provide him upon his termination, it's that document refers to, one, the sick time and allegedly falsification of that, two, allegedly misrepresenting his physical condition to his physicians, or Americans' physicians, rather. That's related to the workers' comp claim. And three, not wearing a splint, which he was not required to wear, which was an alleged violation of his workers' comp restrictions. So we have two out of three of the reasons that are listed in the final advisory, the termination letter, that are comp-related and not related.
But don't you think the airlines must be very worried about people who don't show up on holidays, because the airlines have a very full schedule. In fact, they have more than the usual amount of traffic on holidays. And if their employees start pretending to be sick, that can really harm the airline and the passengers.
That's a very legitimate concern. The airlines have every reason to be concerned about people calling in sick on holidays. With respect to Mr. Gasek was assigned to transitional duty, which is work in a trailer, which is unrelated to the movement of passengers, the movement of aircraft, the movement of baggage. He has nothing to do with the essential functions of the airlines on the holiday period in which he was sick. And that was offered as another reason by the person who initiated this termination proceeding as a reason why she called in surveillance.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Drummond.
You're welcome.
Mr. Cloutier?
May it please the court. Morning, Your Honor. My name is Kevin Cloutier. I'm here on behalf of defendant appellee, American Airlines. Just to address a couple of initial questions posed by the panel, Judge Wood asked about the initiation of surveillance, specifically whether or not the reasons for it are suspect and lead to questions regarding workers' compensation issues. Contrary to counsel's representations, the record is clear. Ms. Havens, the individual who initiated the surveillance, testified at a deposition about the reason she initiated the surveillance. And per Your Honor's comment, she also testified that she specifically ordered surveillance of several other individuals that same day for various other reasons, including FMLA leave, sick leave, and other and another workers' compensation leave.
Does the record give any indication of how often American uses this particular tool, the surveillance option? That's my first question. My second is, when I was asking Mr. Drummond about this, he indicated that her affidavit or her testimony kind of came late in the day to his attention.
Right, and Your Honor, with all due respect to counsel, that's incorrect. Ms. Havens testified at a deposition and outlined all of this in a deposition. What he's referring to is an affidavit from Erica Aviles, who addressed certain additional issues. That affidavit was disregarded by the district court and essentially stricken. And so that particular affidavit is not an issue on this appeal, nor did it affect the actual opinion.
So what we're being asked to do in this appeal, I think, is to figure out which of Americans' actions could be traced back to the workers' compensation complaint, on the one hand, and which seem to be somehow freestanding just because Mr. Gasek called in sick as he's on this transitional duty and he calls in sick. And I mean, it's certainly the case sometimes people wake up in the morning feeling very much under the weather from flu, and by 3 in the afternoon, after they've been moving around for a while, they feel better, but it's a little late to go back into work.
Sure, Your Honor. That is certainly possible, and that's certainly a possibility in certain circumstances. But what we're faced with here, Your Honor, is the critical admission by Mr. Gasek at his 29F investigatory hearing, which is pursuant to the collective bargaining agreement, where he said to Ms. Vance, who is the decision maker in this case, at first he said, well, I was sick with the flu. And he had previously called in on two occasions saying that he had been sick with the flu. Then later on, in that exact 29F hearing, he recanted and said, you know what, I wasn't actually sick with the flu. I just needed more time off for my hand. And, of course, that was after he had been confronted with the surveillance over the number of activities he had run throughout the day. So whether or not he improved over the course of the day when he called in originally saying he was sick is immaterial, Your Honor, with all due respect. What's material
wasn't
is
his argument actually at one point that as long as there was a legitimate reason for the absence underlying this, it didn't matter if it was the flu or the finger?
Well, that is his argument, and that's Mr. Gasek's purported interpretation of the attendance policy. What he ignores is that the attendance policy also suggests that falsely stating a reason for sick leave is grounds for termination. That's very consistent with American Airlines Code of Conduct, Rules 16 and 34, which expressly forbid dishonesty or misrepresentation, and make such dishonesty or misrepresentation grounds for immediate termination or dismissal. So what's not at dispute here, Your Honor, is that Mr. Gasek admitted that he lied. He admitted in the presence of his own union steward that he lied. He came back and told Ms. Vance that he had lied about his reasons for the sick leave. Ms. Vance, at the conclusion of the hearing, reasonably relied on Mr. Gasek's statements and determined that he indeed had lied.
You have a footnote in your brief in which you ask whether this a case like this should be governed by McDonnell Douglas or by Illinois law. So what's your view on that?
Yes, Judge Posner. Our view is, for this particular case, it doesn't matter.
No, I know that. But what is your view on whether McDonnell Douglas should govern in these diversity cases?
Sure. In a case like this where the issue is potentially substantive and outcome determinative, then the Illinois law factors should apply. But the fact is that Illinois law builds in a framework which requires an evaluation of the proffered reason for the termination and whether or not it was pretextual, which is exactly consistent with the McDonnell Douglas burden shifting without the burden shift.
Well,
so,
but that's the whole point. That's sort of saying, without the question that Judge Posner is asking, this is what we have. But the broader question is under Erie and under all of this, whether something like burden of proof, whether the allocation of burdens of production, which you could also say perhaps that McDonnell Douglas has to do with, should be mimicked in the federal court if it's a state court based, if it's a state law based claim, or whether in fact burden of proof and production are things more like a jury trial right, that the federal court follows its own procedures.
Sure, Your Honor. And per your point and Judge Posner's point, our position is that these issues are potentially outcome determinative and deal with substantive law.
Well, procedural issues are often outcome determinative. That doesn't really do much.
Right, and where the procedural issues are outcome determinative.
No, procedural issues are often outcome determinative. That's just the way things work, right?
Even time limits can be outcome determinative. You know, you have to file within 10 days,
yeah,
and you don't file until 15 days, so you lose. You know, but that's usually thought of as housekeeping.
Yes, I understand the question, and I agree that certainly procedural issues can be outcome determinative, but in those cases, it still calls for application of the state's law in a diversity action. And here,
have the Illinois courts considered whether to adopt McDonnell Douglas for these cases?
The Illinois courts have not. They've expressly disavowed adopting the McDonnell Douglas case.
That was my question. Have they discussed that question, whether to adopt McDonnell Douglas?
Yes, they have.
They made a judgment. Okay. So was that judgment influenced by their view of the substantive? Was it influenced by substantive concerns, or is it just that, you know, in Illinois we don't shift burdens; they always stay on the.
Well, Your Honor, the Illinois courts did not address the substantive versus procedural issue. The Illinois courts simply stated that they did not want to expand the tort of retaliatory discharge, and so they wanted a more stringent standard.
So in other words, you're saying they regard McDonnell Douglas as substantive in the sense that it's trying to give, you know, victims of employment discrimination a leg up.
That is exactly right, Your Honor.
Illinois doesn't want to do that for retaliatory discharge. Is that what?
That is precisely the way that the Illinois courts have come out, Your Honor.
Would you agree that the Illinois courts, though, allow circumstantial evidence to be put together to support an inference of retaliatory dismissal or other penalties?
Your Honor, Illinois courts will evaluate the evidence in front of them. Circumstantial evidence is all that we have here. But where an employer offers up a valid, non-pretextual reason for the discharge, then there is no causation.
Well, that sounds just like McDonnell Douglas. So there's a question whether anything is at stake in these
little
issues.
That we've created for ourselves between direct evidence, which is presented circumstantially, and McDonnell Douglas burden shifting.
Well, thank heavens we have the mosaics.
It does sound a lot like the McDonnell-Douglas standard, except without the shifting of the burdens. And so there is a distinction.
I don't think I've ever seen a case where the shifting of the burden to where an employer was unable to articulate a facially legitimate reason for the adverse action. So maybe it doesn't make much difference. Is there any effect here, Mr. Cloutier, of the fact that you all went through the grievance procedure and then that there was no follow-through on arbitration? Does that make a difference here?
Well, we believe it certainly makes a difference as to the fact that Mr. Gasek was represented by a union steward, that he was represented by the union throughout the process. But as to this particular retaliatory discharge claim, it's not dispositive of that particular issue under the Railway Labor Act. But instead, contrary to counsel's arguments or Mr. Gasek's arguments in his brief, that the framework for the collective bargaining agreement provides an important background and context for these actions. For example, the 29F conference is a specific reference to the CBA, collective bargaining agreement, and the reason for the actual investigative meeting when discipline is at issue. And that's exactly what happened here. That's where Mr. Gasek made his express admissions, and that's where Ms. Vance honestly relied on Mr. Gasek's express admissions in this respect.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Boothier. So, Mr. Drummond, your time expired, but you can have another minute if you have anything further.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel has stated that Mr. Gasek admitted in the presence of his union representative and the hearing officers that he, in essence, had lied about his illness and that he was really off work because of his finger. He has stated in his deposition the exact contrary. He has denied that. He's denied that he ever stated that. As a matter of fact, I've attached to the
So he's denying that he never says this phrase, "I was not sick in the flu sense," close quote.
No, what he's denied is that he ever said, "I was never sick at all. I only wanted time off for my hand."
So he admits that he said, "I wasn't sick in the flu sense."
He said, and he referring to the afternoon of the 31st.
What do you think he meant by that?
I think it's a rather inarticulate statement.
What do you think it means?
I think it means by the afternoon, which he also stated, according to their own notes, by the afternoon of the 31st, I felt better. I wasn't sick in the flu sense, and I was feeling better, and my hand hurt at that point. That's it. He called in sick on the 29th, 30th, and 31st and stated that in his written statement, in his deposition under sworn testimony, and those were the notes of their hearing. In their own hearing, if you look at the notes of their hearing, which are attached to my rebuttal brief, most of the questions that they ask are questions related to workers' comp. And they have three versions of that hearing, and then in one of those versions, and these are their notes, there's no court reporter present. In one of those versions, they never even reference this alleged admission, "I was never sick in the flu sense. I was only taking time off work because of my hand." Why would he tell the work comp administrator that I'm sick due to the flu so that he could deplete his own sick bank time? That makes no sense whatsoever.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Drummond.
Thank you.